Hello and welcome to the wild wormhole where, much like the card, you never know what you're gonna get. I'm your host, D-House, here for the third time with my new co-host, Jim, also known as J-Bray. Jim, how are you doing, man?
I am doing great. I've been a little bit haunted by King Potato, almost going 0 for 3, but ready to get some redemption. I know that's going to be a little bit later on in the show, but I've been playing a lot of Keyforge. It's been great.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, you're definitely not getting this week's King Potato. I'm very excited about it, but I'm not going to spoil it. Just prepare yourself for epic failure like you normally do.
Oh, can't wait. I live for it.
That's cool. So you said you've been playing a lot of Keyforge. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So been playing decent amount locally, which has been cool. We'll go into that a little bit later, but we're starting up a local kind of tournament every Thursday. So D-House and I both got to play in that, which is really fun. And then just been playing a lot online as well. Got a few new spicy decks and got to play some competitive, some casual. So, yeah, it was a fun week. What about yourself?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, same here. Been playing a ton online and in person. It's been great. It feels really good to have a store that really is, like, all behind what does the community want. Let's do it. We're at D20 Hobbies here in Lexington, Kentucky, and so doing the weekly Chainbound finally and getting the leaderboard league together and win some new fancy decks with custom alt art something. It's just, yeah, I'm super excited about Keyforge. I'm loving the game. I feel like I learn something every day. This game is just, it's a beautiful game.
Wow, beautiful game. I love it. Yeah, I would have to agree. I think just learning new combinations, new cool things that your deck can do. I think whether that's learning a new deck or having your old tried and true deck and you still learn something new about it each game. There's just, you're always learning, always finding just cool discoveries.
Yeah, for sure. So let's just get into it. We had a little, just an Archon Bring a Deck tournament last Thursday. And nice little three-rounder in the middle of, like, a Magic pre-release or something. I don't know what was happening, but we both went 2-1 to tie for first, I guess. I don't really know.
I mean, if you're cool with ties, I guess we could describe it as that. But I secretly feel as though I'm the winner because we did play each
other. Wow. Okay. I mean, but there was a third guy that was 2-1, and I beat him, and he beat you, so we were like a perfect triangle.
Yeah, I suppose. But I beat you, so, you know, moral victories. I'm here for it.
Yeah. I still don't know why I brought you on as a co-host. You're so mean. Yeah, so it was really fun. What deck did you decide to take to that tournament?
So I brought one of the decks that I took with me, or that I opened up at Nova. The man who smiles upon conversation. I know I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, but I've just been really comfortable with the deck. I don't think it's like overpowered, but it's just very solid. So I'm just very comfortable with it. Builds a huge board. Like I said, that's my play style. And so just, I felt like I wanted to take something that I felt confident with. So that's what I brought. What about yourself?
Yeah, I brought the Artellus of Amber Market. I've actually never really played with it in person, and I was excited to do that for my first real experience of a Chainbound locally. So, so that was fun. And your deck is the first deck I played with the Panpaka Twins in Untamed.
So cool.
Where I feel like I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty nasty when they get going and everyone's +2 in skirmish. It's like, gosh, if you don't have a board wipe, it feels like deflating. Like you just can't do anything.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's why I like the deck so much. It's just because those guys, especially where they can kind of bookend your board. One of them gives everything 2 power if they're to the right of them. The other one gives everything to the left skirmish. And so when you have a board of 8 to 10 creatures that all have +2 power and skirmish, it can get nasty. And I actually learned a fun fact about the Panpakas. They're actually named after Richard Garfield's sons, which I thought was kind of cool.
He's mentioned that a couple times. So
I didn't know that. Thought that was like a very like cool, fun thing that he kind of was able to add to the game. And I love the cards, so it just makes them that much better.
Yeah. So you and I got paired round one.
Yes.
At this tournament, and I got to throw down, and I jumped out to a really quick lead. Like, I think I had 8 amber on, like, round two or something. Like,
we were joking. Yeah, I think your lead was incredible how fast that deck started. I think we were joking, like, have mercy. Please don't just, like, make me hate Keyforge forever after this.
There were a couple turns that I look back now where I'm thinking, okay, maybe I should have played that differently, or maybe I could have done this decision. I don't know for sure. But there was one play in particular, I teased this on Twitter, but where I feel like I made a significant misplay. Because I didn't read cards that I thought I knew. This is like the classic, like, you play games for so long, you think you know what all the cards say, but anyways, so I'm getting far ahead, and I, through some play, I don't even remember what it was. It might have been a hidden stash, I can't remember, but I archived Key Charge. Thinking, hey, this is how I'm going to win the game. I'm going to burst out to end and pull out the Key Charge. And looking at your deck, and I'm like, okay, you don't have like Dissania, or like, in my head, I was thinking, oh, you don't have any archive control.
See, and what I was thinking was, you already have 2 keys to 0 on me, and you're going for a Key Charge play? Unreal. Like, yeah. This is sweet justice in the making.
It's just, I like having that control. And so I just felt like I was totally safe just dropping that. And meanwhile, you've got a dude on the board, a little untamed creature from Age of Ascension called Tantadlin.
Just a little tree guy with 9 power.
Treebeard from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, of course.
You ever heard of him? Yeah, he's an Ent. It's a little Lord of the Rings crossover event. Okay, so this is where, like, in Keyforge, knowing all the cards is so much more valuable than in other games. Like, in Star Wars Destiny, I feel like after the dust sort of settles with the new expansion, there's a lot of cards I don't know what they do because I looked at them once and said, okay, nobody will ever play this, so I don't really need to know what this is. But in Keyforge, you can't get away with that. Like, you have to know what cards do because they might show up in every single match you play that day. And so just knowing the cards, like, playing a lot of games is super valuable. To know exactly what cards do, because you have a Tantadlin there, and in my head I'm thinking, okay, 9 power untamed creature, only does 2 when fighting.
No threat whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm like, not a threat, big dude, but whatever. Like, in my head, that's where it ended. The text on the card ended at, only does 2 damage when fighting, okay, no big deal, Tantadlin's dumb, I'm over it. And then literally your next turn, you have this giant untamed board, and you fight with Tantadlin, you do your measly 2 damage, and you're like, oh, and I'll discard your 1 archive card. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a freaking moron.
All part of the
master
plan.
I didn't realize that, and I had really banked my 3rd key on that, because your board was getting out of control. I mean, you legitimately had like 5 Mars guys, 5 Untamed guys. Like, I have no board wipes in the deck. It's super rush deck. Super, I just want to burst out to 3 keys as fast as I can. And so I had put a lot of stock into this one, like, line of play with Untamed into a Key Charge. And then I realized, oh, shoot. And like, it was sort of that tipping point of the game where I'm like, if I don't Key Charge here, and if I don't get my 3rd key here, like, I cannot stop your avalanche of... Like, you just caught up. It was insane how much you caught up, and you just reaped out to, like, win the game, essentially, because I don't have a ton of amber control either. So,
yeah,
so you definitely, like, made some sweet plays, but it was like, I was so mad at myself for not knowing what that Tantadlin gets rid of archives.
That was one of those games where, like, I feel like a lot of times in Keyforge, you can kind of get away with a mistake here or there. Like, you can find a way to come back. But that one was just so just punishing for you as far as, you know, had that huge lead, almost were there, and then just had to sit there and just watch as this board just kind of reaped a victory from there. It was great from my perspective. And also, I think my favorite thing about the Tantadlin card, so they all have, like, their subtypes, like Beast, Martian, things like that. Tantadlin's is just tree. He's Creature Tree. it's one of those other like parts on there that's like, I don't know if that's ever going to be relevant in Keyforge. I just love it. That's his subtype. So if they ever make Tree Synergy, the imps are coming, man. It could happen. Old Treebeard can run the Untamed back to glory.
I freaking love that. When I played the Lord of the Rings LCG, like I love doing like any kind of Ent deck. Like I just love talking trees for some reason. So anyways, well played to you.
Thank you, I learned an important lesson.
Read and reread the cards, even when you think you know what they do, because that hurt a lot. So
you got a good lesson out of it. I got a good victory out of it. Sounds like we both won that way. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Later on, I had to claw through Jack had a triple Yixalix Dominator double Shadow Self.
Yep, that was nasty. Board.
Ether Spider deck. So he just like put Ether Spider between like a Dominator and or a Shadow Self or two Dominators, and it was like, holy crap! Thank goodness I have. Was it Nature's Call? Wow, I'm blanking right now.
The one that sends him back to his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm doubting myself. I'm going to make sure I'm saying that right.
So,
Nature's Call. It is. Yeah. Return three creatures to their hand. So thank goodness I had that. Cause I would just get him. I got the Aether Spider to like eight amber, then Nature's Called, and then key charged, you know, to finish out. But
yeah, that deck was nasty. That was my one loss was to him. And it was cause I was able to get the PM packets out, had skirmish, was able to kind of fight through that. And then he had a coward's end just to immediately just punish me the moment I kind of
I will say in that game, it was a pretty epic finish because I Nature's Called him. And then I had enough amber to forge my third key. It goes to his turn. And he said, and he very confidently says, all right, Mars, like he does it. Like it's, you know, that when you're at third key and like they call so quick, you're like, oh, man, they like, could
this
actually
has
do
to
something.
Be it, right.
And then he drops Key Abduction, and he's like, I'm pretty sure I just have enough in his hand. Because I put, like, a ton of creatures back in his hand with the Nature's Calls. And so he starts counting the cards in his hands, and he counts up. He's, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13. Oh, no. 14. And he was one card short for a natural Key Abduction, like, free key.
And you responded calculated, right?
Yeah, it was literally like, he needed 15 to do the Key Abduction. He had 14. Like, that's how close that game
was. Wild, wild, wild.
Yeah.
And you played a couple of
almost bit me in the butt.
So
I did, yes.
So that was an instant win.
Yeah. Which is really funny because we were talking about how terrible of a card Dexter is. Like, we were all talking about, like, it's just such a waste. And then I wild wormholed into a Dexter, and it was like right after talking about that, and we had a good laugh. It was fun.
Old Dexter. Best card in Logos by far.
Yes, sir. All right, well, let's move into our sizzle reel segment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where we talk about a couple plays or moments in Keyforge that we either pulled off or we saw someone pull off that would make the sizzle reel for SportsCenter Top 10 if they covered Keyforge. So, Jim, what'd you see?
Sure. So this sizzle reel is actually one that was done to me. So we're both in some of the Sanctimonious online leagues. That's the Archon, so you bring one deck, or sorry, three decks, so Archon Triad. They ban one,
Triad.
You get to play two. Thank you. And I played a competitive match finally, and the three decks, he had one that was like his measly 70 rated score. I was like, oh, that can't have anything in it. And then two like mid-90s, so I banned one of those. And so he's playing me against his deck, and this is where, not knowing the Call of the Archon deck super well, I got pretty punished for it. So it was one of the Mars decks that had Martian Generosity and two Key Abductions. And so he started out the game, got to five amber pretty quickly, and then played Martian Generosity and immediately played two Key Abductions to, I think, turn three, already be at two keys.
Oh, wow.
And so he had his whole hand. I mean, he was able to draw through the whole deck at this point, which is just crazy to me, which the amber doesn't quite work out. I promise he had his whole deck. I don't remember quite how much amber he was able to get up to before he played that card. So, yeah, he got to two keys super quick, and then I actually was able to pull out a win the first game against that. I don't really know what happened. I was able to kind of build up a board and kind of keep him off the six amber to close it out, which is wild. But as I looked at the deck, I mean, even though it only had like a 70 rating, there were just so many cards that benefited that package. So he had like four plague rats. Just if I ever tried to build up a board, he just wiped them real quick with the plague rats. I mean, 10 damage to everything with four of them. You just can't stop that. He also had a glimmer from Untamed that can pull a card back to your hand when you play it. So he could have pulled back a key abduction. He never was able to do that to me for some reason. So he could have called Untamed, played Glimmer, get the key abduction back, next turn call Mars and just beat me that way. So hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast and learn that secret there.
Well, but even key abduction, I mean, it's not great without Generosity or Battle Fleet.
So, but he still had most of his hand from when he drew so much. So he played it real quick,
okay.
Got him back, still had 15 cards in his hand or however many he had.
Oh, sick. And,
yeah. I mean his, it was very gross. So I do think that potential is still there. And if you draw your whole deck, you should have Glimmer. So it seems like a pretty like easy thing to pull off if you have Battle Fleet pretty early on. So anyway, somehow. I was able to avoid that. Got a win on it. And so, yeah, that was the sizzle reel for me where I had to learn the Martian Generosity key abduction combo the hard way. So yeah. What about yourself? What did you see?
Yeah, so this was one of those where, like, this is not, like, any mind-numbing, awesome thing. There's probably a lot smarter players out there than me who probably knew this already. But I sort of, like, stumbled into an accidental combo that felt pretty sweet. I got a new deck on Friday. I literally just went in. I'm off on Fridays. I just hang out with my son, and we went in and... I grabbed two decks and I popped it open and it's actually like my new favorite deck. But there's the Brobnar suite is pretty sweet and it has Drummer Knot but no Ganger Chieftain. I was really sad about that.
Yeah, that's such a sick combo always.
But it does have a Brammo and we've talked about Brammo a few times in this on this podcast. But it's a 4-power Brobnar creature. When you play him, you deal 2 damage to each of your enemy's flank creatures. So the deck has Drummer Knot, Brammo, and then it has 2 copies of Relentless Assault, which is a Brobnar action where it says ready and fight with up to 3 Brobnar creatures one at a time. And I've never like been super crazy about that card, but in this deck, it's pretty nasty. So this is kind of what went down. My opponent had a pretty sick board. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was large and much bigger than mine. I had a Drummer Knot and maybe a Groggins. I don't remember exactly, but Drummer Knot was in play. And then I have a Brammo and Relentless Assault in hand. So I played Brammo, did 2 to each flank. Then I reaped with the Drummer Knot, which allowed me to return Brammo to my hand. So then I played Brammo again and did 2 to each flank. So again, I'm like, you know, chipping away.
4 damage at this point, so...
Yes. Well, 8 damage because it's 2 to each
flank. Right.
So it's, yeah. Then I played Relentless Assault. So I fought with Brammo and then I fought with Drummer. I think I threw Brammo into like an elusive guy. And then I fought with Drummer Knot, which returned Brammo to my hand. And then I played Brammo a third time to kill the rest of the board. And so ultimately Brammo ended up doing 12 damage on his own.
Wow.
In addition to fighting for 4 and Drummer Knot fighting for 4, which is pretty nasty. So it's like I didn't have like cowards. I didn't have a great way to deal with the board, but was able to trigger Brammo 3 times with all that nastiness. So it's cool. You know, it's fun just even learning like little things that you can do with cards like Relentless Assault or like having some Brobnar guys out and they don't have a board, you can reap with your guys and then Relentless Assault, you ready all of them. You don't have anything to fight, so you can just reap. So it basically turns Relentless Assault into a Virtuous Works.
Right.
Just giving you some like nice burst there with Brobnar. So nothing crazy, but I was like, oh, this is sweet. I really like this combo.
Yeah, so best case scenario, you clear their board. Worst case scenario, you get 3 amber. It's like oh, rats. So that was...
Yeah, I know, right?
That's so sweet. And yeah, Brodnar just has so many combos like that where they just kind of mesh well together, those giants. They can do some work for sure.
Yep. So, all right, well, let's move on from the sizzle reel, and let's hit the big news.
Yes.
We didn't even mention this last week, but on Thursday, FFG had this super hyped up, crazy, get pumped live stream.
What was your favorite guess as far as what this live stream was going to be about?
Favorite guess. I think the recipe for the rhubarb crumble that Alex was pretty good that Alex Watkins had talked about. Like, that was super clever. And there were a lot of memes that came out of that, which made me happy. I don't know. My prediction was like a draft mode because I think there's a lot of ways you could do it, which was obviously completely wrong. And yeah. I'm embarrassed. But I'm glad I was wrong because what they did talk about was pretty cool.
It's definitely groundbreaking for FFG. Let's definitely go into some of the details of what they talked about before we kind of give her thoughts on it.
Yeah. So first of all, they started talking like game design stuff, which is really cool because hearing Richard Garfield talk about it, it's like he's like a proud dad, you know? Like he's like,
it's so true.
He's like, and then we did this, and then we tried this, and then oh, I messed up there, but oh, but then you guys figured out how to do this, and I'm just look at what it's doing. Like it's just it. I felt like he was gushing on camera, and it made me super happy to watch that. But one of the things he was gushing about is a brand new thing called procedurally generated cards. Now I had to essentially like listen to this twice because at first I didn't really understand what he was saying.
Right.
But yes, go ahead.
Oh no. I was just gonna. Yeah. What specifically is he talking about with that?
Okay, so I'm going to do my best to explain it, and if you think I don't explain this well, please interrupt. But essentially, there are certain cards that are coming out in Worlds Collide that might do something. Like there's a Shorty's Brew, I think, is the card they used for an example, where it's like an action card that gives +2 power counters to one of your creatures. So on first glance, you look at that, and you're like, okay, that's pretty insignificant, like... Power counters, as we've learned in Untamed in Age of Ascension, aren't like groundbreaking. It doesn't necessarily advance your board state. But what he mentioned is that specifically in that case, if Shorty's Brew ends up in your deck, it will procedurally generate a new version of a card in your deck. Not a new version, but a creature in your deck will automatically appear with 2 higher power than it would normally appear. So if you think of like a Lollip the Titanic, if he's in there,
oh my
instead
gosh.
Of an 11, he would have a 13 printed power.
Yeah.
It's a natural, it printed on the card. That's what makes it so epic is like there are going to be versions of this that are going to be like the only ones in the world, right? Like, where this popped up and happened to give +2 power to this one creature. So, like, when you see that pop up in your deck, you're going to be, like, siphoning through, like, okay, what creature got +2 power? It could be, like, you know, Lollip the Titanic, you look at that, you're like, okay, that's no big deal.
Yeah, he's already that 11. Significant. But, yeah, there's definitely some that would be just crazy to have higher power.
Yeah,
to.
I mean, you know, like, stuff like Professor Sutterkin, instead of being at 2, which is a very vulnerable place to be in Keyforge, is all of a sudden a 4.
Yeah.
Like that makes it just a little bit out of reach, or even like a 3 to a 5 feels like that's a significant jump, you know, like when you're trying to kill a succubus, and all of a sudden it's not a 3, it's a 5, which I learned the hard way. like it's just fascinating, right? So you're going to have some like really interesting, super unique decks out there. And I wonder, even like looking at your opponent's Archon list, if Shorty's Brew pops up, if you're even going to know, like, well, what has +2 power?
Like, yes, Lob, just going to have like a little +2 next to his name.
I don't know. There. So another one that he talked about is like the, I think he called it like the cultural exchange officer, or something like that in Star Alliance. So if that guy appears in your Star Alliance house, he automatically switches houses with another creature in your deck.
Right.
So all of a sudden, your Duskwitch from Untamed is now a Star Alliance card, and the Cultural Exchange Officer is an Untamed card.
And like you said, it's going to be printed on the card, so that Duskwitch is going to look like a Maverick in the
right.
Yeah, the new faction. Yeah, that's so interesting to me, and such like a unique game that they're even able to like think about doing something like that.
Right, like the creativity behind that blows my mind. So if you weren't already hyped for dinosaurs in Worlds Collide, I feel like procedurally generated cards should like just get you there. You know, like that's amazing.
Yeah, I think it definitely takes that playstyle like just to the next level. I mean, like you said, with like the plus two power, there's so many things with just passive abilities that just having a little bit of extra burst would be so great. And also just thinking about just the potential now that that opens up, and you know, just Keyforge already being such a unique game where you kind of get that deck as is. Like it seems like it'd almost restrict them more, but it actually does the opposite where they're able to do things like that to really just change the actual nature of the cards like as they are. I think that's just so cool. It's not like you choosing what house they change to. It's like, nope, it's now Brabnar. It's now this. That's just what it is now. So I think, yeah, there'll be some really cool things coming out of that. Seems dangerous. You know, anytime you open up infinite possibilities, someone's going to find something broken. But I think it'll be so
but
fun.
But the great thing is, like, you're talking about one card in a deck.
Sure,
so
sure.
That one card might be insane, but like, it's just the way that this game stays balanced. But as someone who, like, enjoys the creative side and seeing, you know, different decks, like I hate when I'm playing a certain game and I see the same deck and the same cards at every table.
Right,
you know, it's like
right.
reliving the same thing over and over and over again. Like, that's what attracts me to Keyforge is, like, every time I sit down, I'm like, oh, gosh, what is this? What kind of weird combos and, you know, lines of play is going to come out of this? And then I see things happen, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. You know, like, I can appreciate that. Even though I know they didn't, my opponent didn't design the deck, like, I still think, oh, man, they brought something super creative and unique to this experience. And it's like every game is a new story that I get to be a part of. I love it. This is stuff that gets me psyched for Keyforge.
I definitely love just kind of dreaming through it. Even just thinking about the games where I'll have like kind of combos going on, but they're of different houses. So it'd be like playing like They're Everywhere, and then which is a Untamed card that just kind of does damage to your opponent's board, and then trying to play Misery Exploit the next turn from Diz, which gives you an amber for each damaged enemy creature. So if those now could be in the same house, you could play them as a combo on the same turn. Like, there's so many cool opportunities that this really opens up and really kind of gets your head thinking of, like, what could happen. I think it's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't wait. I feel really bad for the guys who developed the Crucible Online, because it's like, how the heck are you going to even figure that one out?
Account for all of that. Hopefully it's kind of already built into the system there. But, yeah, that'd be strange. You know, you get the deck list and it's Lollip the Giant over here, but you know, now all of a sudden he's 13 instead of 11. So, yeah, not quite sure how that one's going to translate. But they can figure it out. They're pretty smart.
Speaking of which, the Crucible does have a Patreon, if people didn't hear. And I last night I hopped on there and subscribed to their Patreon, throw them a few dollars every month. Because, I mean, I use it for entertainment on a daily basis. So I feel like, you know, I pay for my cable. I pay for my internet. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
I should throw some dollars their way to you know, show them some love. So if you feel so inclined and you get a lot of joy and you know, fun out of the Crucible, you can jump on there and support them. The link is just at the homepage of the Crucible. But
if only
there
that
were a
was
lot
all
of people.
The
yeah, there were a lot of people very upset about there not being an announcement about a digital version of Keyforge. But they were pretty clear on the front end that it was not that.
Right.
They put enough comments on Facebook and stuff like that that I did not expect that. Obviously, I hope for that. But, I mean, it like that kind of work is not something you can do. The game released 10 months ago. I mean, come on. And they didn't even know if it was going to be as successful as it is. So I say give it some time. Richard Garfield already talked about they're working on it. So let's give them time to do it right and not just release something that's buggy and doesn't work. So it was not about that. The big announcement, Jim.
Oh, well, yeah.
Go ahead. Take it away. What's the big announcement?
Sure. So the big announcement is another competitive style of play called Vault Warriors.
Vault Warrior!
And their explanation of Vault Warrior is pretty cool. I think at first you hear Vault Warrior, it's like, that's kind of a silly name. But they described it as like the professional athletes of the Archon or the Crucible. And so they wanted to kind of bring that competitive aspect to our side of things and our way of playing. And so, yeah, they talked a lot about just kind of this new, I guess, competitive tournament. And the big
tournament
thing,
series.
Tournament series, yeah. And the big thing they announced with it is there are actually going to be cash prizes attached to this.
Cash money!
Ending in a tournament with a prize pool of $100,000, which, like, for FFG, woo! They've never considered. I'm sure they've considered cash prizes before, but they've always said no. So this is really the first time that we've had something like this. And so it was, I think, unexpected of an announcement as far as going that route, especially when we already have the Vault Tour. And this is not replacing the Vault Tour. It's a completely different event or series. And so,
yep.
Why don't you tell them a little bit more about, I guess, like how you qualify, kind of what that structure looks like.
Yeah, so essentially there are Vault Warrior tryouts that are run by stores. Stores can apply to do it. There's no cash prizes, but if you win it, essentially you get a free seat at a Vault Warrior qualifier. And then the Vault Warrior qualifiers will be held around the world. You can either earn your seat through a tryout or just pay to get in, which is kind of nice, I guess.
Yeah.
At the qualifiers, there's a prize pool of $10,000 with the winner taking home $2,500. Top 32 players from the qualifiers will be invited to the Vault Warrior Championship, which is the final tier of the event held in Miami, Florida, which is pretty cool.
Someone's excited.
Love some beaches. I love the beach, man. Get me down there. And so you can basically go to this where it's a multi-day event with lots of side events and $100,000. The winner of the event getting $25,000.
Ooh. That's full hard cash right there.
Now, yeah, for real. We'll come back to that. At the Vault Warrior qualifiers, there's multiple days with different chances to qualify. That basically, at the qualifiers and the championships, top 32 and up get cash prizes, which is pretty nice. You know, just if you get top 32, you walk away with something. The format is honestly maybe what I like the most about it all. So the Vault Warrior tryouts, the format is Archon Current Set. Specifically Current Set.
Right.
Which I think is great because I think we've seen Call of the Archons has had a lot more success than Age of Ascension. And there's a lot of debate on to why that is. But I think overall we just see a higher showing rate of Age of Ascension than – or sorry, of Call of the Archons than Age of Ascension. So I think like sometimes it's easy to like lean on the crutch of like the original set and some of the busted stuff that was in there. But I like that when Worlds Collide drops, it's like if you go to a Vault Warrior tryout, you know, you got to play Worlds Collide. You got to know your Worlds Collide and do really well. So it's kind of rotation, but it's only for Vault Warrior and not for Vault Tour, not for Store Champs, Prime Champs, Worlds, none of that. It's just Vault Warrior. So, and Jim, any thoughts on like that specifically?
I think they did a really good job of explaining kind of that they are two separate entities. I think a lot of people at first were thinking, well, we just got used to the Vault Tour and how that operates. And they kind of went a little bit more into like Worlds and kind of what to expect there, which is also something pretty cool that they're planning. But yeah, I like that it's, you know, the current set, you bring your deck, you win with that deck, and you can kind of progress through the ladder. This game is very casual as far as the way it's kind of designed. Seems to favor casual play. But I think for a game to grow and really kind of be solved, I guess, I think that casual aspect really does need to come into it. And I think this is a great opportunity to do that. I think a lot of like the confusion behind it was that it does kind of affect a small number of people. But even still, like there's so many just different avenues to like follow this championship series to be able to kind of see, okay, what are these guys playing? What are they thinking? Kind of how is the meta shifting? There's all these new avenues that kind of open up with a hyper-competitive league like this that I think is really interesting. That's my first thoughts. I think the other main thought I have with that is actually having money involved with it. I know with other games, thinking like Yu-Gi-Oh! In particular, where once the money aspect kind of got brought into the game, there's almost like this hyper-competitive style to the game. Where a lot of people kind of have some like negative connotations to that. But I think it's going to be a learning curve. I think it's going to be something that, you know, we as a community really need to kind of embrace, see how it goes, kind of jump behind it and just kind of run with it. I think it can be something that's really awesome and cool. And, I'm super excited for it. I really want to go to one of these qualifiers if I can, just to, you know, give it my best shot. I just want to, I by no means think I'm going to win, but just to, you know, see where I stack up or how I play.
Yeah.
Things would be so fun just to compete.
Yeah, for sure. I think the important thing to remember, like a lot of people said, like their critique was when after the announcement, they're like, this doesn't affect me. This affects 1% of KeyForge players. And to a certain level, sure. Like if you're not planning to go to any of these, you're not interested in cash tournaments, like yes, in the very like functional way, maybe it does not affect you personally. However, I do think when a game like KeyForge, it's been out for 10 months, is able to put this kind of support behind the game. I mean, this is going to be on a lot of people's radar, and a lot of guys who maybe KeyForge is their first game, like, are going to be even more invested in the idea of KeyForge and spend some time playing it. And Richard Garfield put a comment on BoardGameGeek talking about this, and I want to read this quote because I think this is really important to remember, and I think he hit the nail on the head here. He said this. He said, I am optimistic that FFG can support both casual and serious play and areas in between. Games can mean different things to different folk, and I have found that my generally casual play is enhanced when some audiences are taking it seriously. For example, I've played many small, weird, trick-taking games I think are terrific, but the amount of science that serious players have put into Bridge will always make it exciting to engage with at all levels. Whether or not they manage to manage the support of the casual play correctly or this is the right move, I can guarantee you their heart is with the casual play. It's why they have this parallel local play structure, and they're also talking about how best to do leagues, which for me is the best way to play casually if one wants more structure and playing the decks which you have around. So basically, you know, he's saying like when there's a pocket of people that take the game really seriously, it does positively affect the casual crew because, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're watching games on YouTube and you're looking at rating systems and discovering decks in your collection that you ignored at one point. But now you're like, oh, wait, someone who took this very seriously has helped me see this deck a little bit more clearly and can play it casually. And the other piece of this is like FFG figured out the perfect system to that nailed the ability to play this game in whatever way you want to play it. So, like, if you want to be a casual player and just play this game casually, you absolutely can. You can buy one deck and play that at the kitchen table with your significant other, or you can go to the local store and play in the leaderboard league and just do that. You can do that. No one is going to prevent you or bring enough toxicity in the game to prevent you from doing that. If you're a semi-competitive player that you enjoy this, but you don't want to play for cash, you don't want to do that, Vault Tours and Prime Championships and the World Championships are going to be great opportunities for you. And then, but if you really have that itch, like you want to compete at the highest level and see how you stack up against the world, like these Vault Warrior things are going to be great. So it's like they're not forcing you to play in cash tournaments. This is a completely different series that isn't taking over Vault Tours or Primes or whatever. And I think it's brilliant. I think it's extremely interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of positives to it, like you said. And I see both sides of it for sure. But I tend to lean more towards the side of that actually opens up the game and really kind of opens up that opportunity for other people. And like you said, you know, you're talking to somebody new about getting excited about this game, and it's kind of like, what else is the draw outside of just the game being cool? It's like, well, here's the potential. that you can achieve. And I feel like, you know, it's a card game. It's a competitive game. Hearing about competition is going to get people excited. You know, it's going to open that up for, you know, people to want to learn more about this game and want to go check out new decks and play styles. So, yeah, I fully agree with you. I think it's awesome. Very excited to kind of see how it plays out and really hoping that some of the qualifiers are close here because I want to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm the same way. I got to tell a quick story. My wife and I were going through the mall like 6 months ago, and we walked by a game store, and I was just kind of checking out some of the games, and she's like, wow, what is that game? There's like a million things of it, and she was looking at Magic the Gathering, and obviously there's like a million expansions.
Oh, yeah, I've never heard of that game.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's this game, and, you know, this it's just a little different than the games I play, but it's like the most popular game, like, and they have, you know, even like professional players who like win money, and like it's a big deal. She's like, wait, you can win money playing games? And I was like, well, you know, like some games. She's like, why haven't you played that game? You could be winning us money. Like, it was so funny. She's like, you mean this could have been benefiting me in a very practical way?
That's fantastic.
So when the KeyForge announcement made, I came home and I was like, hey babe, KeyForge tournaments, I could win some money. She's like, yes, okay, go. And she was like all supportive and like, go win it, go do it. Like, you know,
man, you are living the dream. It's incredible.
I know. I probably have like, less than, you know, 0.0002% chance of ever winning money, but it did make me happy, and I hope to, you know, convince her to say, hey, I'm gonna go drive 4 hours to a qualifier because I might win money, and her be very supportive of that. So
yeah, so that's really the biggest win that came out of this, is it gave us an excuse to go play more KeyForge. The potential for money's there, therefore you have to let us play.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Like, it's amazing.
It's great. All right. Well, there's certainly more we could talk about there, but let's go ahead and move on to the King Potato segment. We'll skip decks of the week this week just for time's sake. Let's go right to the meat and potatoes of the show.
I'm excited.
You see what I did there?
It's going to happen.
You see what I did there?
I kind of breezed right over it, but it's a pretty good one. I'll give you that one.
It's really good. It's really good. By the way, I am looking for more King Potato submissions and suggestions. So if you want to tweet at us at the Wild Wormhole or hop on our Discord, and we have a King Potato channel. It's basically just deck names that you think are hilarious, and you want to see if we can guess the houses of the deck based on the name. See if we can pair up the algorithm. So, Jim.
Oh, yes.
Are you ready?
I'm so nervous. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you're not ready. King Potato this week is the woman who will never forgive noise. The woman who will never forgive noise.
This is a real KeyForge deck.
If you make noise near her, it's over, man. You're donezo.
Donezo.
She will never forgive you for that.
Oh, my gosh. So, wow.
She's very sensitive.
Okay.
She's very sensitive.
Oh. Okay. Well.
What are your guesses, my friend?
All right. Since this is clearly scientific and we're able to kind of solve this logically, first thing is... never forgive noise. So when I think noise, I think things that are not stealthy. But since she's not forgiving the noise, I'm going to flip that. And so we're actually going to get shadows as one of the houses.
Okay.
So yeah, I just think noise. I think kind of stealth, elusive. That's my shadows all the way. Never forgives. So that's pretty harsh. So yeah, when I think never forgives, I think like obviously zero potential to ever come back from that. And gosh, when I play against Diz, sometimes I just feel like I have no hope and I can never come back from that. So because of that, I'm going to guess Diz as well. So let's see. The woman who never forgives noise. I could also see forgive be some sort of like righteous thing. Like she's righteously never going to forgive you for this. So I'm also going to guess Sanctum. So we're going to go Shadow, Diz, Sanctum. Final answer. Tell me I got 3 for 3.
That was a really apt description and explanation for your rationale. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. Yeah, I worked really hard on that one.
Man, like your third Wild Wormhole episode, and you're talking like an expert. This is brilliant.
Yeah, the expert has never gotten this right.
Let's see how you did here.
Okay, 3 for 3. You got this.
So your rationale for the never forgiving noise was fairly astute, my friend, because Shadows is the first house.
Absolutely. Wait, the first house? That makes me nervous.
Well, I'm going in my own order. Okay, you know. So Shadows is indeed correct. So I imagine a woman who's on the Shadows team angry at some rookie thieves who made noise and she never forgave them. They ruined a big job. So
it was a routine job and then they messed it up.
Yep, exactly. Although there is no routine job in here. secondly, you may be on something with the forgiveness righteousness thing because Sanctum is a house in this deck.
Yes, 2 out of 3. That's awesome. That's awesome. So go ahead and tell me the third.
And then the third house is, of course, I don't know how you missed this because it was like right there in the name, but it's Brobnar.
Oh, you're so right. It was right there. No, the woman is Valdir. That's what it is.
That's it. Oh, except Valdir's not in there.
All right, then there's no rhyme or reason behind this one.
No, I'm going to figure out. See, you know, a woman who never forgives is a very dangerous person. Mm. You do not want to cross someone. You do not want to cross a woman who will never forgive your noise. And so, so naturally, this woman is part of the Brobnar Hulk Smash crew.
Naturally,
and there is a. I figured out there's 2 copies of anger in Brobnar.
There it is.
So the 2 copies of anger triggered the never forgive. She's very angry. So that's how they got it.
Man, 2 out of 3. That's a win for me. So I'm cool with pretty that good. One. So
still waiting for a 3 for 3. I
think the 0 for 3 is going to come before the 3 for 3, but we'll see.
That's awesome. Good, man. Well, guys, as we close out the episode, be sure to follow us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, The Wild Wormhole. Hit us up on Discord. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can join us and have some discussion there. Add some King Potato suggestions. And then to close, we always like to add a little flavor text because we love the flavor of Keyforge. And this week's flavor text comes from the strange gizmo from Logos, a very odd artifact for sure, and it just says, in quote, "Why did we make this thing again?" Which sometimes I think that about the Wild Wormhole podcast, like, why do we do this? Does anybody listen? I don't know. It's a good question. It's great.
That's fantastic. Oh, strange gizmo. So such words of wisdom.
I love it. Jim, any final words?
Yeah, definitely, you know, go check out your local scene. Hop onto that new, the new set. You know, you can win that alt art card, full deck actually, which is pretty sweet. So check that out, get that started around your local area, and, just looking forward to this week.
Love it. Well, guys, thanks for listening to the Wild Wormhole. May all of your Wild Wormholes be unpredictable and as terrible as this show. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.